Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Monday, November 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier is predicting a day of sunshine mixing with clouds, with wind from the southeast between 4 and 8 miles per hour. A high today of 41 degrees, and tonight a low of 32. Looking around the region, times of clouds and sun today, occasional rain tonight, breezy late, breezy tomorrow with periods of rain. Wednesday, occasional rain and drizzle in the morning, then clouds and sun in the afternoon. Top stories on the front page include the ER never stops, Facebook project predicts cases, disability advocates appeal to legislators, and we begin with officials warn of holiday risks. The story is filed by Sydney Sizon of the Courier. Waterloo. The Thanksgiving holiday brings worries for Black Hawk County Health Department staffers who fear that people traveling and gathering will further spread COVID-19. The county experienced its highest level of new cases in November and sat at a 23.7% positivity rate as of Friday, according to local data. Health Department Director Nafisa Nsisi Eboigne said she hopes people's celebrations don't overwhelm the local healthcare system. Nearby hospitals are at or near capacity with ICU beds and have staffing shortages, according to Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center and Unity Point Health Allen Hospital officials. "This is something that we have all been on edge on," Eboigne said. "We're hoping that everyone does the right thing." Eboigne said gathering with outside family members or friends could have a domino effect. She asked people to be more creative with celebrations this year, including utilizing video platform Zoom to see loved ones. Zoom announced that it will lift the normal 40-minute meeting limit for all meetings on Thanksgiving. Quote, "This is a time where we have to think about what does love look like," Eboigne said. "And love and celebration during a pandemic, you have to think about the health impact of decisions, the impact your decisions can have on others' health. This is the time to be very cautious," unquote. She urged people to look out for family members who are elderly and have pre-existing conditions, which makes them more vulnerable to serious symptoms of the virus. Quote, "We want to make sure that we have come out of the holiday season not devastated, but actually joyful that we did the right thing for our community," she said. Getting tested for COVID-19 before the holiday does not ensure that people don't have it, she said. The virus cannot be detected in its earliest stages, and it would also require every person getting tested to strictly quarantine before any gatherings. She said testing can give you a false sense that you don't have COVID, unquote. Eboigne said she wants to ensure that high-risk populations are getting access to tests. The general population, she said, should take on preventative measures to avoid needing tests in the first place. People without symptoms can still have the virus, she said. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 40% of people are asymptomatic. "This community is about not just caring for ourselves, but our families, our neighbors, our friends, and so it's important that we continue to think about this community in that matter," Eboigne said. For residents who choose to have normal Thanksgiving celebrations, Eboigne said they should distance from one another at least 6 feet, wear masks, and avoid direct contact, such as hugs or handshakes. The ER never stops. On the front lines of the Iowa COVID-19 spike, filed by David Hoddle, and it begins with a photograph of two healthcare workers, and the caption says, "Unity Point Trinity Muscatine Emergency Room lead nurse Tasha Tovar and Dr. Rhonda Sowards, medical director of the emergency room, dress in protective gear that keeps them and their patients safe from the spread of COVID-19. Muscatine, with a 12-hour shift in front of them and a waiting room full of patients, many showing signs of being infected with COVID-19. Emergency room lead nurse Tasha Tovar and Dr. Rhonda Sowards, medical director of the Unity Point Trinity Muscatine Emergency Room, don the protective gear they hope will keep them safe. For over a week, traffic through the emergency room has rarely let up. While numbers have held steady, the increased need to change protective gear has doubled the time it takes medical providers to see patients. As Tavara and Swords dressed in their masks, one-use-only gloves, gowns, masks, and face shields, they remembered these precautions were necessary to stop the spread of a disease that has so far killed more than 259,000 people in the United States and 2,100 Iowans. Quote, "We are seeing a much more challenging time with this," Tovar said on the statewide spike in cases. "We are seeing a higher rate with this than we were in the spring. It is seeing an uptick for sure." The recent spike in COVID-19 in Iowa has made the state one of the highest areas of infection. Estimates are Iowa will see 100,000 new cases in November, and an area with one of the highest death rates. Throughout the state, the record high number of hospitalizations has made treating patients more difficult, with the lack of bed space throughout the state leading to longer waits for treatment. At Unity Point Muscatine, an area previously used as a waiting area has been altered to add two additional treatment beds to the 11 normally offered. Sowards said over the past month, the acuity of the patients coming to the emergency room has increased. As fear of COVID-19 keeps some people from coming to the hospital for care, she said some patients are much sicker than they would have been if they sought help sooner. The pair have seen COVID-19 patients running the spectrum of symptoms from mild to severe. Tovar said children with COVID-19 seem to have very few symptoms, if any. The elderly population is affected more severely. According to the Iowa Department of Public Health, over half of Iowans who have died of COVID-19 have been over 80, and more than 62% who have died had a pre-existing medical condition. The staff quickly learned any symptom a patient may have could indicate COVID-19. Tovar said when someone comes to the emergency room with a cough or shortness of breath, COVID-19 is automatically suspected. They have learned if someone comes in with diarrhea, that person could also be a COVID-19 patient. She says any symptom can be consistent with COVID-19. The amount of staff on duty during the spike has remained the same due to illness and staffing concerns, and Tovar said there are times when more staff could be used. She believes this is the same for every hospital in the U.S. right now, especially in Iowa. She said during Thanksgiving week, the schedule has been padded to allow additional workers in the emergency room at times. Quote, "There is going to be some challenges for patients, and that is why we want to be sure the right people are coming to the emergency room," Tovar said. "We want to make sure sick people who have emergency conditions are coming to the emergency room instead of patients with mild symptoms that can be treated in urgent care or a care clinic. That would certainly help." Since the beginning of the spike, emergency room beds are full by afternoon, and there is a wait for treatment. Sowards said one contributing factor is intensive care units throughout the state are full, meaning the patients need to stay in the emergency room longer while they are waiting for an ICU bed to open. Both medical professionals believe the reason for this spike is simply because people became too lax in their precautions. They relaxed as the state was beginning to open up and people stopped wearing masks and social distancing. Large gatherings have become more common. Sowards said as the state was opening, the number of cases began to climb and an eventual spike was not unexpected. Quote, "The holidays are coming up and that is scary for us because we know there are people and we don't want to insult the people who believe this is a hoax or believe that it is a political thing, but the reality of it is that people are sick and people are dying," she said. "We just need to remind people to maintain social distancing, wear a mask, wash your hands, and avoid large gatherings. Just stay safe and keep others safe." With Thanksgiving coming up, Sowards and Tovar hope the spike won't get worse, but in a way they believe it is inevitable. Tovar said there is a lot of mental fatigue from social isolation, and she feels people want to move ahead with their normal lives. Swords warns there are so many asymptomatic cases. All it would take is a child to hug their elderly relative, and the disease could be spread. As they prepared to see patients, the emergency room workers took the time to remember why they do what they do and the thing that makes all the effort worthwhile. They thought of the patients who recover and seeing them walk out of the hospital to resume their normal lives. Quote, the ER never stops, Sword said. There are people in the ward at 2 or 3 in the morning, and there are many more at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. There are up and down times, but there is always something happening here at all hours, unquote. Facebook AI predicts 12,585 COVID cases in Black Hawk County by the end of the month. Story filed by Amy Rivers. Waterloo, tagged your location in a photo on Facebook or taken a survey on Facebook from Carnegie Mellon University? Your data is helping influence a prediction of how many coronavirus cases there will be in Cedar Valley by the end of the month. Facebook Artificial Intelligence, along with Facebook's Data for Good project, are collecting your Facebook data along with other publicly available sources to predict the county will have reached 12,585 total positive cases by November 30th. The model predicts 2 weeks out because anything longer than that would be less accurate, said Laura McGorman, public policy manager at Data for Good. Quote, this forecast is going to be ongoing, publicly available, and up and running as long as the pandemic lasts, she said. Data for Good started at the Facebook company 3 years ago. They're the ones behind natural disaster response maps, compiling information about hard-hit areas and evacuation routes from AI-generated data when you mark yourself safe or tag yourself in a location. This year, they began partnering with hundreds more organizations around the world on pandemic response and prediction, McGorman said. Our work has really gone from more pilot and experimental to mission critical, she said. While Data for Good uses other coronavirus models like Johns Hopkins University and the New York Times, they're also able to tap into Facebook's huge user base, grabbing information that people post publicly about their locations to determine whether people are staying close to home. The prediction also takes data from a survey Facebook offered to its users from Carnegie Mellon that asks about people's habits wearing masks and whether they have coronavirus symptoms like fever or shortness of breath. It's then compiled into a map where users can click on individual counties and see the prediction for the next 2 weeks. On November 17th, Data for Good predicts by November 30th, Black Hawk County will have 12,585 cases, Bremer County will have 2,305 cases, and Buchanan County will have 1,400 cases. As of November 20th, the three counties had 9,912, 1,687, and 1,035 cases, respectively. We've seen our forecast track very closely to county-level data sets, McGorman said. Unfortunately, we are seeing that cases are significantly on the rise in many places in the U.S. McGorman said the data can be helpful to both county-level decision-makers and health officials, helping them plan for ventilators and inpatient bed usage, as well as to the average resident wanting to plan a safe holiday. One thing the model won't predict is if a ton of people travel over the Thanksgiving holiday. That could cause cases to be further than what our estimates projected, she said. Ultimately, McGorman hopes the data are another reminder for residents to remain vigilant about the spread of the virus. Quote, if you're in a place where cases are on the rise, now more than ever, this is really a reminder to take heed of the advice of public health officials, she said. Disability advocates hope newly elected legislators consider their stories, filed by Amy Rivers. The story opens up with a photograph with the caption, "Waterloo resident Tucker Cassidy is a quadriplegic who requires in-home health aid several times a day. He's sheltering in place during the COVID-19 pandemic. Waterloo." There were a lot of reasons that Eric Donat cast his vote for President-elect Joe Biden this year. But there was also one very personal reason the Waterloo man cast it against President Donald Trump. And it wasn't even anything that happened in 2020. It was Trump's mocking of a disabled New York Times reporter during his first campaign 4 years prior. Quote, "I've been called retarded. I've seen that gesture before." Donat, who has cerebral palsy, said disparaging and discriminating against people with disabilities wasn't an okay thing with me, unquote. Donat wasn't alone in remembering that and having that affect his vote 4 years later, according to pollsters who released the results of national surveys for Respectability, a national disability rights organization, on Thursday. Quote, "One of the top incidents, even at the top of the campaign, was how disrespectful Trump was to the reporter in his first campaign," said Celinda Lake, president of Lake Research Partners, who spoke on the results of the survey conducted by her firm and the Terrence Group. That said, people with disabilities, like the country as a whole, were split politically. 53% voted for Biden, while 46% voted for Trump, according to Lake's poll. Quote, "In a swing constituency, talking about disability issues was underdone, frankly, and it influenced votes," Lake said. Those with disabilities were also concerned with broader issues, such as the economy, health care costs, and the government's coronavirus pandemic response, said Stan Greenberg of Greenberg Research, who conducted a pre-election online survey for Respectability. That's not surprising to Tucker Cassidy, who is quadriplegic and advocates for disability rights locally and says he's an independent voter. Quote, "A lot of people try to compartmentalize things. Okay, we have Black Hawk issues, Latinx issues over here, LGBTQ over here, and the disability community over here. And it's like, no," Cassidy said. "There are issues that intersect with all of them." The two national surveys found that people with disabilities wanted candidates to craft plans and legislation helping address issues important to them, like Social Security reform, health care costs, and jobs. Those with disabilities only have an employment rate of around 35%. But candidates largely did not have specific plans addressing the disability community. Donat, who works and volunteers for several Democratic committees locally, said Kamala Harris was the only candidate we saw use 10 minutes of her rally speech in Waterloo addressing those with disabilities and what she'd do as president to help. Quote, "I was impressed by that because no other candidate did that," he said. That made him want to caucus for Harris until she dropped out of the race. Cassidy said he also noted Biden's post-election speech included the word disability, which he believes might be the first time a president-elect has used that word in an acceptance speech. Quote, "So that was exciting, even though that's such a bare minimum," Cassidy said. "It's a low bar, but it hadn't really been vaulted over until this time, which is crazy, especially when you look at 1 in 5 of all Americans have a disability," unquote. "That's an opportunity for all candidates," said Kurt Decker, who heads the National Disability Rights Network. Quote, "The power of disability vote really hasn't been tapped to the extent that it could be," he said. "This is an incredibly powerful group, and in tight elections could really make the difference." Donat, who serves on several boards and commissions locally, including Waterloo Planning and Zoning, Housing Trust, Commission on Human Rights, and others, calls himself Mr. Everywhere and said it was his goal to prove that people like him should be valued members of their communities. Quote, "The whole point of me being involved in all these things is I'm a person with a disability and I can be included and I can contribute just as much to society in different ways. and I think it's important, he said. Both Donat and Cassidy said their work continued at the state level, particularly as they have been frustrated by majority Republican legislators' embrace of privatized Medicaid and payment reimbursement failures that followed. Quote, we're going to have to do that much more work to get in those people's ears and convince them that what we're doing isn't working, Cassidy said. Donat said he held out hope. People with disabilities should not give up, he said. Even though people might not go along at first, you keep telling your story and you keep doing your activism and things change, unquote. Turning the page to the In the News section, Taylor Swift wins top prize at AMAs, stories filed by the Associated Press, and begins with a photograph with the caption, Roddy Ricch performs at the 7th Annual BET Experience on June 21, 2019 in Los Angeles, New York. Taylor Swift won her third consecutive Artist of the Year prize at the American Music Awards, but she missed the show for a good reason. She said she's busy re-recording her songs, masters, after her catalog was sold. In a video that aired during Sunday's awards show, the pop star said, quote, the reason I'm not here tonight is I'm actually re-recording all of my old music in the studio where we originally recorded it. So it's been amazing, and I can't wait for you to hear it, unquote. Last year, music manager Scooter Braun, who manages Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande, announced that his Ithaca Holdings company acquired Big Machine Label Group, the home to Swift's first six albums. This month, Braun said, he has sold the master rights to Swift's first six albums to an investment company. Swift acknowledged the sale on social media, and she said she would not work with the new buyers because Braun was still involved. Instead, she began re-recording her albums. Swift beat out Bieber, Post Malone, and Roddy Ricch to win the top award. She also won Favorite Music Video and Favorite Pop Rock Female Artist. The Weeknd lost Artist of the Year, but he still kicked off his All-Star Week as a big winner. Days before he's expected to land multiple Grammy nominations, the pop star dominated the 2020 American Music Awards with multiple wins. The 30-year-old won Favorite Soul R&B Male Artist, Favorite Soul R&B Album for After Hours, and a Favorite Soul R&B Song for Heartless on Sunday, 2 days before the 2021 Grammy nominations are announced. Quote, the last time I received this award, it was given to me by the late, great Prince, he said after winning Favorite Soul R&B Album. And you know, he's the reason I get to constantly challenge the genre of R&B, and yeah, I'd like to dedicate this to him, he said. The Weeknd didn't break character throughout the three-hour show, with his gauze-wrapped face, which matched the vibe of his recent album and music videos, where he appears bloodied and bruised. He accepted his awards and performed with his face wrapped in gauze. Kenny G joined The Weeknd for his performance, playing the sax in downtown Los Angeles as The Weeknd walked across the stage singing In Your Eyes. He finished the performance singing Save Your Tears. The Weeknd was one of several artists who appeared live at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles for the fan-voted award show. Others recently taped their performances because of the coronavirus pandemic, though host Taraj B. Henson, who appeared live from the venue, said the few audience members sitting in the mezzanine practiced social distancing, wore masks, and were tested for the virus. Breakthrough singer-rapper Doja Cat performed and won multiple honors, including New Artist of the Year and Favorite Soul R&B Female Artist. Grammy-winning country duo Dan and Shay performed I Should Probably Go to Bed and won Collaboration of the Year and Best Country Song for 10,000 Hours, both shared with Bieber. And Megan Thee Stallion won Favorite Rap Hip-Hop Songs for WAP, or W-A-P, with Cardi B, performed Body from her recent Lee-released debut album, Good News. Bieber and Shawn Mendes kicked off the AMAs with a taped performance of their new duet, Monster, marking the first time they performed the song together. It began with a stripped-down Bieber singing his recent hit, Lonely, with songwriter-producer Benny Blanco on piano, and Holy, where background dancers wearing masks joined him. Mendes, strumming his guitar, then appeared for Monster, which featured the 20-somethings singing lyrics about fame and growing up as celebrities who attracted massive public attention. Mendes later sang his song Wonder during the show, which aired on ABC. Katy Perry, in her first performance since giving birth to her first child, gave a strong performance of the emotional and hopeful song Only Love, which featured a surprised guest appearance from Darius Rucker, who sang and played guitar. With flaming red lights glaring behind her, Billie Eilish sang her new song, Therefore I Am, as her brother, songwriter, producer, Phineas, backed her on guitar. Jennifer Lopez and Maluma teamed up to perform their new songs, Pa, T, and Lonely, from the film Marry Me, which both of them star in, while Dua Lipa, who won Favorite Pop Rock Song, levitated in the air during her performance of Levitating. 24 Karat Golden and Ian Dior, who currently have the country's number one song with the smash hit Mood, also performed. The multi-genre track is the rare song that has reached number one on both the rap and the rock charts. Christmas with Wartburg heralds season with free online concert, December 23rd, story filed by Melody Parker, and begins with a photograph of two women holding candles. They're dressed in black and wearing black masks and performing in front of two decorated Christmas trees. Waverly. In its 73-year history, Christmas with Wartburg was heralded each holiday season, celebrating the birth of Christ through the gift of music. This year is no exception, but there are a few changes because of the coronavirus pandemic, said director Lee Nelson. The concert will premiere online at 7 p.m. December 23rd, and the public can stream their performance for free at www.wartburg.edu/Christmas. There will be no live concerts. The format will look different than it has in previous years. There is narration, and all of the ensembles perform, but we chose to record the groups individually. There isn't a backdrop, but we decorated each area for Christmas where each group was recorded. We never had more than one group in the spaces at a time, and we followed COVID safety protocols, said Nelson, Wartburg's Patricia R. Zahn Chair in Choral Conducting. The performance will be archived for those who are unable to watch the premiere. A recording of the 2019 Christmas with Wartburg production, quote, Behold the Mystery, will premiere online at 7 p.m. December 4th at the same website. It was surreal to record CWW in mid-October. Quote, I didn't realize the visceral response we would get from students. We put up Christmas trees and garland, and each night a group would come in to record, and there were tears of joy because they were so moved to be singing and performing again. It's a virtual performance, but you still get the feelings of hope and love you get performing for an audience. And I didn't realize how much this concert means to the hearts, minds, and souls of the students performing. There's this feeling of tradition in carrying on messages of hope and love at Christmas that these concerts provide each year, Nelson added. You are listening to the recording of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Monday, November 23rd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to the sports page. Iowa Women's Basketball. Iowa's Cinzano embraces new role. Center led the nation with 67.9 shooting percentage last winter. Story filed by Steve Batterson of the Quad City Times. Another year, another role. That's just the way things seem to work for Iowa Post player Monica Cinzano. Quote, understanding that I'm a veteran now is something I've kind of had to wrap my head around, Cinzano said. It was like, whoa, when did I get here? But it has been an eye-opening experience. I've never had to do it vice versa, like Megan Gustafson did for me. The junior, who 2 seasons ago accumulated a few minutes but soaked up every second she had to watch and learn from the Hawkeyes' 2-time Big Ten Player of the Year and consensus All-American, now finds herself mentoring the next young post prospect to arrive at Iowa. Sharon Goodman, a 6'3" freshman from Lime Springs, Iowa, has had plenty of questions for Cinzano, who traded the reserve role she filled behind Gustafson as a freshman for a strong sophomore season. Cinzano emerged as one of the top shooters in college basketball, her 67.9% shooting touch ranking as the second best effort in the country at the NCAA Division I level. With just 2 more field goals, she would have led the nation in shooting. The 6'3" native of Watertown, Minnesota, earned all Big Ten recognition last season while averaging 16 points and 5 rebounds per game for a 23-7 Iowa team, which finished 3rd in the Big Ten. Quote, it would be a little silly to say that I wasn't a little surprised with Monica last season, Iowa coach Lisa Bluder said. She goes from being really a very role player her freshman year to being the second best field goal shooter in America. Who wouldn't be surprised by that? That was remarkable. As the Hawkeyes work toward Wednesday's 6:30 p.m. season opener against Northern Iowa at Carver Hawkeye Arena, Cinzano expects more. Quote, I'm trying to improve on last season's shooting percentage, honestly, she said. I feel like I can make it better than what it was last year, unquote. Bluder expects Cinzano's presence down low to continue to help open things up on the perimeter for a deep group of Hawkeye shooters. Cinzano also expects to work to improve her overall game from inching her shooting percentage upward to collecting more rebounds and defending more effectively in part by reducing her foul totals. She also plans to continue to help Goodman settle in at the collegiate level. Goodman averaged 27 points per game last season, and she finds herself learning every day from Cinzano. Quote, there's such a legacy here for post players. Her accepting me into that has been very nice and very encouraging, Goodman said. I think we have a great relationship already, and I'm here to push her and compete with her too. Goodman said competing against other players her own size has been a new experience for her in practice. Quote, I'm finding new ways to compete and learning how I have to adjust if I want to be able to go against players my size, Goodman said. I'm understanding why I need to work on my strength and make gains there. I'm learning every day. Cinzano said the two spent a lot of hours in the gym together since Goodman arrived on campus earlier this summer. Quote, she's been picking up everything so beautifully, Cinzano said. I never really understood this when Megan was doing it for me. It was nice when you got a little, oh my gosh, she's doing it so well. And I find myself now in practice being like, oh my gosh, great job, Sharon. Bluder said there have been moments when Goodman has held her own against Cinzano, a welcomed environment as the Hawkeyes work to grow depth on this year's roster. She also likes the way Cinzano has helped Goodman progress as the start of a unique season approaches. Quote, I think Monica is doing a great job leading. I think, as a sophomore, we needed her to work on so many other things and concentrate on so many other things that I didn't want that to be on her plate, Bluder said. But she has become a leader because that's just the type of person she is. I'm excited to have Monica here for a few more years, and I think people will see how she has continued her growth over the past year, unquote. Cinzano is ready to share that as well. Quote, I think we're all excited to finally get the season started and see where it can all lead, Cinzano said. We surprised some people a year ago. We feel like we can do the same thing again. In Iowa football, Iowa's defense continues to force turnovers by Steve Batterson and begins with a photograph of a scrimmage between Iowa and Penn State with the caption, Iowa defensive lineman Zach Van Valkenburg tackles Penn State running back Kayvon Lee during the first quarter Saturday in State College, Pennsylvania, University Park, Pennsylvania. Zach Van Valkenburg doesn't have a complicated explanation for it. The defensive end, who recovered two fumbles Saturday in Iowa's 41-21 victory at Penn State, figures it was absolutely pure luck that he happened to be in a position to secure the takeaways the Hawkeyes turned into two touchdowns. Quote, the coaches always tell you to run the ball, and really, there's a lot of what I've been doing, Van Valkenburg said. I've been in the right place at the right time. Van Valkenburg recovered his first fumble in the second quarter shortly after Iowa had taken a 10-7 lead at Beaver Stadium. The second came on the first snap of the third quarter when Dane Belton popped the ball out of quarterback Will Levis's hand, and Van Valkenburg recovered it at the Hawkeyes' 46-yard line. The fumble recoveries were followed by a pair of fourth-quarter interceptions against a Penn State team, which fell to 0-5 as its turnover tally grew to 13 for the season. Iowa has forced 14 turnovers while building its 3-2 record, and defensive linemen were ended up with the ball in their hands following each of the Nittany Lions' four turnovers on Saturday. Quote, we're focusing on our assignments. That's the main thing. But when we have an opportunity, we do what we can to make the most of it, Van Valkenburg said. It's a matter of perspective. Iowa ran the ball 46 times and threw it 28 times against Nittany Lions, a successful blend that receiver Brandon Smith said the Hawkeyes can live with. Quote, you always want the ball in your hands when you can get it, but mostly we want to win, Smith said. We all have a job to do. Smith's role includes being a productive blocker that has helped Iowa's run game thrive in what was a balanced attack against Penn State. The Hawkeyes collected 175 yards on the ground and 186 through the air, where quarterback Spencer Petras spread his 18 receptions among eight team members. We're doing what we can to help Petras. It's his first year starting, and I remember my freshman year. It's not easy, said Smith, who caught three passes for 27 yards. We're all doing what we can to help him along. Offensive guard Kyler Schott missed a third straight game, and defensive end John Wagoner sat out his second straight game for Iowa. Coach Kurt Ferentz said Schott has a chance to return next Friday against Nebraska, while Wagoner was listed on the Hawkeyes' depth chart for Penn State as a second-team end. Offensive tackle Coy Kronk did make the trip to Penn State and is nearing a return to the Hawkeyes' rotation on the front five. Offensive lineman Jack Plum saw his most extensive action for Iowa. Ferentz said tackle Mark Kallenberger was a little hobbled, providing Plum with an opportunity. Mark's certainly been playing well. It was good to get Jack Plum in to play some meaningful snaps. Good experience, Ferentz said. Iowa didn't arrive at his hotel on Friday night until around 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time because of travel issues. The Hawkeyes were scheduled to take off from the airport in Cedar Rapids shortly after noon on Friday, but a mechanical issue with the charter plane that was waiting to take Iowa to the airport at State College, Pennsylvania, prompted a lengthy delay. Iowa players spent Friday afternoon at the Hawkeyes football facility in Iowa City waiting for a replacement aircraft to be brought in, and shortly after 6 p.m., the Hawkeyes eventually winged their way to Penn State. Quote, things worked out, Ferentz said. Fortunately, we didn't have an 11 o'clock game, unquote. In Iowa State football, Cyclones in position to play for Big 12 championship, filed by Ben Vesser, sports correspondent. And it begins with a photograph of Iowa State players making a tackle, and the caption is, Kansas State quarterback Will Howard, center, is tackled by Iowa State defenders Mike Rose and Isheem Young during the first half on Saturday. Ames, Iowa State has had a historic season to this point. Cyclones were 5-1 in Big 12 play for the first time ever, and now Iowa State is 6-1 in conference play, and it sits atop the Big 12 standings. Iowa State is in position to play in the Big 12 championship game, but first, it has to overcome the biggest challenge it has faced. The Cyclones clobbered a good Kansas State team 45-0 on Saturday. Iowa State's reward? A short turnaround and playing a Texas team on Friday that's 4-2 in the Big 12. Quote, "This is going to be one of the great challenges that I've had as a coach and we've had as a program," Coach Matt Campbell said. Quote, "This is going to be really hard, but I feel like that's what you want this time of year. You want hard, tough challenges that are defining who you are and who you become. A win against Texas and Iowa State is almost assured a spot in the Big 12 championship game." But Campbell believes that looming possibility is not where the difficulty lies. "Coming and playing on a short week, that's hard in our sport," Campbell said. "This isn't a non-contact sport. This is hard, tough sport. Getting a short week is not easy," unquote. And in that fact that Texas is more than well rested because its game against Kansas was postponed on Saturday due to Kansas's COVID-19 issues, and Texas was coming off a bye week before the scheduled Kansas game. Quote, "Then the second part, you're playing an outstanding football team," Campbell said. "Really good challenges sit in front of us. We'll have to do a great job in preparation and be ready to play at our max capacity by Friday." Running back Brees Hall said the preparation started Saturday. Quote, "We have to start our recovery process early. Get in the film room and come with the same approach," Hall said. "We play a day earlier next week, but I feel like we didn't get beat up too much on Saturday. We all got out early. Starting tonight, we have to start that recovery process so we're ready to play next Friday." For the first time in the Campbell era, Iowa State began November 2-0. That's a huge step in the right direction for the Cyclones, who have struggled in November. Safety Greg Eisworth said it's because of the team's new collective mindset. Hickok always says, one step, one breath. It's about the ability to reflect and figure out what you could do differently, Eisworth said. It's insanity to do the same thing over and over and expect different results. We really tried to work from the inside out. We're all one brain right now moving together, and I'm really excited moving forward. Senior offensive lineman Sean Foster has noticed a new attitude in Ames. Quote, "Getting a 45-0 win like we did Saturday, yes, that's huge. But tomorrow we know there's a big opponent in Texas later in the week," Foster said. Like some of the linemen said after the game, "We were ready to go two or three more quarters. We have a lot of guys on the offense and defense that just love the game." Quote, "It's the first time since I've been here that I've actually seen the love of the game go all the way through November and through December. Everyone loves football and loves each other more than any team I've been a part of, and that gives us a chance," unquote. In the NBA, making a splash, Mitchell, Jazz agree on max extension. Filed by Tim Reynolds, Associated Press basketball writer. Donovan Mitchell got the life-changing news Sunday and immediately began celebrating. He ripped off his t-shirt, ran out of the house, and leaped into the pool. And just as he did in his first three seasons with Utah, he made a huge splash. Mitchell is now a max contract recipient, he and the Jazz agreeing Sunday on a 5-year extension that guarantees him $163 million. The new paydays start kicking in with the 21-22 season and could be worth $196 million if he reaches the All-NBA level. Quote, "A dream does not become reality through magic. It takes sweat, determination, and hard work," Mitchell wrote on Instagram after sharing a toast with CAA basketball agent Ty Sullivan and some family members as the celebration continued. The Jazz did not immediately comment. Typically, teams cannot discuss contracts publicly until they are signed, and it was unclear when Mitchell will put pen to paper to complete the transaction. Mitchell averaged 20.5 points as a rookie, then 23.8 points in his second season, and 24.0 points last season as a third-year player who wound up making the All-Star team for the first time. And even though the Jazz lost its first round of this past season's playoffs in a seven-game epic against Denver, the Nuggets rallied from a 3-1 series deficit. Mitchell was dazzling. He averaged 36.3 points in that series, including 57 points, the third highest scoring total by any player in an NBA playoff game, in Game 1 of the matchup. He followed that with a 51-point outburst in Game 4, a game where he and Denver's Jamal Murray became the first duo with 50-point performances in the same playoff game. Murray had 50. Sacramento's De'Aaron Fox was the first player from the 2017 draft class to get the max extension this offseason, doing so on Friday night. Like Mitchell's, his is for $163 million over 5 years, starting in 2021 and 22, with a chance of escalating to the $196 million mark if he reaches the All-NBA level or meets other criteria. Sunday was the first day that most NBA free agent contracts could be signed. Free agent talks around the league opened Friday evening, and many of the deals were struck over the weekend, starting to become official on Sunday. In other developments, Dallas. Willie Cauley-Stein is returning to the Dallas Mavericks on an $8.2 million two-year contract, a person with knowledge of the deal told the Associated Press on Sunday. The Mavericks acquired a veteran center from Golden State before trading deadline last season, and his impact was minimal before he opted out of the restart following the coronavirus shutdown because of the impending birth of his daughter. Cauley-Stein declined the $2.3 million option on the two-year deal he signed with the Warriors. His return gives Dallas another option behind Kristaps Porzingis and Dwight Powell. It's possible Porzingis and Powell will start, with Powell likely filling the traditional role of the center. Dallas also has Boban Majorovic in a backup role. The 27-year-old Cauley-Stein averaged 5.2 points and 4.6 rebounds in 13 games for the Mavericks. His career averages in five seasons were 9.6 points and 6.3 boards. Golden State. The Warriors completed the trade that will bring guard Kelly Oubre with them from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Golden State gave up a conditional 2021 first-round draft pick and a 2021 second-round pick for Oubre, who will help the Warriors deal with the loss of Klay Thompson to a major injury for the second consecutive season. Thompson missed last season with a torn ACL. He'll miss this season with a torn Achilles. Oubre averaged a career-high 18.7 points and 6.4 rebounds in 56 games with Phoenix last season. He was traded to the Thunder last week. Indiana. The Pacers completed the re-signing of Justin Holiday to a three-year, $18 million deal. Holiday was the only Indiana player to appear in all 73 regular season games a year ago, averaging 8.3 points. Quote, "Re-signing Justin was one of our main priorities going into free agency," Pacers president Kevin Pritchard said. "His contributions last season were tremendous. He can play multiple positions and is extremely versatile," unquote. Turning to the commentary page, an editorial by Aaron Murphy. Governor's COVID PSA is a good effort, but critics say it's late. And the article begins with a photograph of the governor. As public information campaigns go, Governor Kim Reynolds' PSA encouraging all Iowans to do their part in slowing the spread of COVID-19 is a solid entry. However, the governor has drawn criticism that it's too late and would have been useful weeks or even months earlier before COVID-19 cases began their recent spike to previously unseen levels in Iowa. Reynolds recently announced the public information campaign which will include public service announcements to be broadcast on Iowa television and radio stations and published in newspapers across the state. Reynolds did the smart thing by partnering with the Iowa Broadcasters Association and the Iowa Newspaper Association, which will help ensure the message reaches all corners of the state. During a news conference last week, Reynolds unveiled one of the TV ads that is part of the campaign. The ad hits the right notes. It reminds Iowans to take the simple steps of wearing face masks, social distancing, washing hands, and staying home while sick. And it reminds Iowans the health of everybody is at stake. The ad also uses a smart mix of spokespeople to deliver that message. It features current and former state leaders of various political stripes. They include Reynolds, a Republican, and former Governor Tom Vilsack, a Democrat. It features medical workers from the CEO level, University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, CEO Shurish Gonsakarian, and the front lines, Test Iowa nurse Katie Witt. It features an Iowa sports legend, former college wrestling coach Dan Gabriel, and it features a well-known everyman, Carson King, who used his sudden social media fame to donate $3 million to the University of Iowa Children's Hospital. Quote, COVID-19 isn't stronger than Iowans' resolve to overcome it, Reynolds says in the ad. Let's step up and stop the spread together. Perhaps the video will resonate with Iowans, especially those who may have been treating COVID-19 with a more cavalier attitude. Hopefully, it has an impact on slowing the virus's ferocious spread throughout the state. Perhaps, as critics say, it would have been effective earlier this year, before the virus began spreading at an exponential and deadly rate. Maybe it would have helped lessen that sudden explosion. What if this campaign would have been put together in April or May? Maybe it would have resonated with Iowans then, causing more people to be more considerate about their everyday behaviors and how they impact the virus's spread. And maybe sudden change we're seeing would not be so severe. It has been severe. In Iowa over the past month, the 14-day average number of new cases has quadrupled, the number of daily hospitalizations has tripled, and the 14-day average of new deaths has doubled. The virus is spreading in Iowa at a rate not seen before during the 8-month pandemic. Some are still learning. Something that was said during a news conference this week by Dr. Caitlin Padotti, the state epidemiologist, bears repeating. Quote, we want to just make sure that people understand it's still important to keep yourself away from others if you have COVID, and to keep yourself away from others if you've had a COVID exposure, because that really does help limit that spread, Padotti said. As reported out of that news conference, at the 8-month mark of a global pandemic that has claimed the lives of more than 2,100 Iowans and more than 250,000 Americans, Padotti apparently felt compelled to remind people who are infected with this virus that they need to distance themselves from others. That people still need this reminder right now is not a good look, and perhaps helps explain the recent explosion in COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. Turning to national news, President-elect transition planning, cabinet nominees set. Biden's scheduled to announce first round of picks on Tuesday. Story filed by the Associated Press. Washington. Anthony Blinken is the leading contender to become President-elect Joe Biden's nominee for Secretary of State, according to people familiar with Biden's team's planning. Advisors to the president-elect's transition said they'll make their first cabinet announcements on Tuesday. Blinken, 58, served as Deputy Secretary of State and Deputy National Security Advisor during the Obama administration and has close ties with Biden. If nominated and confirmed, he would be a leading force in the incoming administration's bid to reframe the U.S. relationship with the rest of the world after 4 years in which President Donald Trump questioned longtime allegiances. Blinken recently participated in a national security briefing with Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris and has weighed in publicly on notable foreign policy issues in Egypt and Ethiopia. Biden's Secretary of State would inherit a deeply demoralized and depleted career workforce at the State Department. Trump's two Secretaries of State, Rex Tillerson and Mike Pompeo, offered weak resistance to the administration's attempts to gut the agency, which were thwarted only by congressional intervention. Biden has pledged to build the most diverse government in modern history. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump, on Sunday, appealed a federal judge's dismissal of his campaign's effort to block certification of votes in Pennsylvania. The president and other plaintiffs filed notice of appeal to the Third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals a day after the judge issued a scathing order shooting down claims of widespread irregularities with mail-in ballots. The case was always a long shot to stop Biden's inauguration, but given Pennsylvania's 20 electoral votes at stake, it was the campaign's best hope to affect the election results through the courts. Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, appeared in court for the first time in decades to argue the case last week. The campaign also filed a motion Sunday night asking for an expedited hearing Wednesday as they seek to amend the Pennsylvania lawsuit that U.S. District Court Judge Matthew Braun dismissed before the state certifies its election results next month. Even some Republicans broke with Trump in recent days and called on him to accept the results of the election. Quote, I frankly do think it's time to, well, it's past time to start a transition, to at least cooperate with the transition, said Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican of North Dakota, on NBC's Meet the Press. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Monday, November 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time, and you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And thanks so much for listening today.